I don't think I deserve the applause because we've already been 5 minutes in. Yeah, okay, ironic clapping because this is a second take because I forgot to press the record button. So I'm Mark Childs. This is Pedagodzilla. We are on the Friday morning and I haven't woken up properly yet. And we are talking about formative fabulous formative failures. And we are also talking about piss poor teaching. And so those are the options we gave our guests. And our guest has chosen to talk about both. So double the benefit. And also slightly more warmed up because we've already done this once. So Mark Childs, you'll have recognised my voice. I've done loads of these. And so would you like to introduce yourself and where you're from?
Yes, I am Kai de Villiers and I am from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Okay, and you were saying last time around that you're well known for games design?
So the university I studied at, the University of the Witwatersrand, they have a game design course and it's a fairly new course. I joined it when it was in its, third run.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only been going for the last, under 10 years. So again, a fairly new course. And I wouldn't say I'm particularly well known there, but people do know my name because I have a tendency to be incredibly annoying. but also because I'm a chatty person and they can come to me and learn and ask. And on top of that, because of my degree, I was able to get the job that I have. So it's also kind of not so much an feel inspired by my story, but also it's just a way for people to know that just because you're in a country wherein the game community is tiny doesn't mean you can't soar.
Yeah. So you're a sort of role model for the undergraduates because you say this is what a graduate could, this is what you could be. That's excellent. And what brings you to this conference?
So my client, Dr. Lauren Trajakowski from Aston University, was put in contact through a mutual friend of ours. And this mutual friend knows that I have a very, very big interest in gamifying education and making it more accessible to people who might not learn as well in a typical school environment. So I was put in contact with her because she wanted to try gamify her course because it's a fairly morbid course, as she self-described it. It's disaster ethics and disaster management. Yeah. So again, it's a fairly morbid topic. So she did want to make it a more fun and interesting topic to engage with. Again, the context and the content isn't very fun to talk about, but when you are in a simulated situation of it, it's a lot more conversation prompting and it allows for a lot more conversation and argument about what the right and ethical thing to do is in a disaster or a crisis.
So you sort of play the game for a bit and then you get to a point where there's an ethical decision and then you break from that and then you have a discussion about what the right thing to do would be. Oh, excellent.
Exactly.
That sounds really good.
With this, there wasn't a right answer, but there also wasn't a wrong answer. It's basically just how you justified your decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, as with a lot of ethics stuff, really, I guess. Yes, no, it is. Mm-hmm. So were you going to talk about some of your fabulous formative failures or one of them in particular?
Yes.
It's a good one.
At one of our smaller cosplay conventions in South Africa, just before COVID hit, I believe this was 2017, I'd sewn my entire cosplay, which was a character called Hanayo Koizumi from a school idol anime called Love Live. So I sewed that entire cosplay by myself. It was kind of the first one that I'd made from top to bottom. And I'd entered the intermediate competition and I came first in that, which is really, really
cool. Excellent.
Thank you. But the following year it was within the next 2 years, we'd had the first Comic-Con Africa. And I attended that in another cosplay I'd made. And this cosplay was Lucina from the Fire Emblem series. Mm-hmm. And again, I'd made it top to bottom. I entered the intermediate competition again. And it went less well compared to the last time. when we have these cosplay events, they usually encourage you to walk across the stage, mm-hmm. To show off your cosplay, to show off your character, that sort of thing. So when I went up on the stage and started walking across it and doing like a little twirl,
yeah,
the boots sort of started coming apart.
Oh no.
So I'm kind of like walking there and hobbling along the stage trying to pull my shoes back up. And
oh, no.
Yeah, in front of a lot of people, that's pretty humiliating.
Yeah.
So I can, that was the fabulous failure. And it doesn't necessarily pertain to pedagogical learning.
No, no, I think they're all. So what do you feel you've learned from that then? Is there something that you kind of go back to that and think, I've changed or I do something different or what did I learn about?
Yeah, so am I allowed to swear on this?
Yes. Oh fuck yes.
Okay, excellent, excellent. From that, I learned people don't really give a shit. And
yeah.
I mean that in the best way possible.
Mm.
The shame and humiliation I felt was kind of sedated by the fact that my mom, for example, she is not a creative. She is very much an academic. She is incredibly impressed that I managed to go from a skirt to sewing a pair of trousers and a cape and everything else. So I also kind of figured that the people who matter are the people who will be incredibly proud of you and impressed with you, even if you consider yourself or your particular task a failure. And I suppose that doesn't really translate well into a place where you need to earn money and you need to get acknowledged.
Mm.
But
maybe it does. Go on, sorry.
Oh, it's cool. I think it does because, again, just because you fail doesn't mean someone without the same skill set won't be impressed.
Yeah.
So I feel like the project with Lauren could have gone a lot better, but she isn't a developer, so she was blown away. And I think that's what's important, you know. Just because your name isn't in the stars doesn't mean you don't have a place in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And just because no one will see you shine, again, doesn't mean you don't have a place in the sky. It just means they kind of need to try a bit harder to get to know you. And I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, and also, I'm guessing, I mean, the Comic-Con community, it is sort of, there's quite a few people that go to the same ones. It's a community. I've been to a couple. I didn't really mix much, so, and I didn't have a cosplay thing because I have absolutely no skills in that direction. So I had nothing really to bring to the community, so I felt a bit outside it. But I do know that it's a very warm and welcoming and supportive one. And so that even if you completely fail in front of everyone, first of all, chances are they've done the same thing. They've had a costume
Absolutely.
Fall apart or they've done something really humiliating. And also they're on your side. So they will. Their main worry is about your humiliation and your feeling of failure rather than feeling that themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that we... Because in the first take of this, I asked you about what you'd felt about the conference and I forgot to do that the second time.
It's all right.
So, but do you... That's. I know they're trying to push that a lot, and we had the kind of co-chairs on talking about trying to make it inclusive. Do you think that's been achieved here?
I definitely think so. We have a wide variety of people of color, people who are able-bodied, people who are disabled, people who are queer, people who are not, people who are neurotypical, people who are neurodivergent. It's a really nice mix of all these different people of all walks of life, kind of just coming together and educating each other. And even if you don't talk to anyone, you can pick up snippets of conversation that are pretty beneficial. The presentations were one of my favorite parts. but I also think that even if you only presented while you're walking around, you're going to learn something anyway.
Right. I'll have another sip of coffee while I work out what I'm doing now. Aha, piss poor teaching. You said you had an example of that.
Yes. So my example of this was when I myself was in university. I was in second year English and they have a particular rule about walking in late. And I'd gone to the bathroom and by the time I'd rushed to the lecture hall, it was closed. And I wasn't aware that there was a block her in front of the door because they tried to lock you out if, well,
oh, good grief.
I believe that particular lecturer tried to lock you out if you were late. So I pushed the door open and the thing holding it down or holding it closed was a desk. So I pushed the desk over and it kind of cascaded beautifully down the stairs and everyone turned and I took a bow.
Oh, brilliant. Nice. Nice.
And I think from that was a failure on the teacher's part. Mm. And I think just because you're running late for something doesn't mean you're disinterested.
Mm.
And educators need to understand that. They need to understand that there is a certain sense of agency in their students. If they don't want to go to the lecture, they simply won't.
Mm-hmm.
If they're running late, then you cannot deny them access to it because it's out of their control.
Mm.
For example, what if I had twisted my ankle and then I was hobbling along and entered that classroom? Like, sorry, I'm late, but I also hurt myself, or sorry, I'm late, I needed to go to the bathroom. So I think this was in university, by the way, not even primary school or something like that. So I think taking away a certain level of agency from young adults is condescending in a way.
And
there is a lack of understanding about that. And I mean, again, consider someone who's on crutches or in a wheelchair.
Mm.
They can't exactly run to attend their lecture. So I think there needs to be a certain level of understanding and, you know, consideration for your fellow humans when it comes to education. Look, I know this might have just been one piss poor lecturer.
Yeah.
But it is something I've seen every so often when I walk around campus, people saying I was kicked out because, you know, this reason.
Yeah.
On top of that, and on that same vein of inconsideration, one of my best buddies had to go up and do a speech in university. And they had a little breakdown on the stage because, you know, giving a presentation is incredibly difficult. And the lecturer kind of just pushed and pushed, and eventually they told the lecturer to get fucked and walked out. So I think there's also this expectation that what works for one is going to work for everyone.
Yeah.
Not everyone likes public speaking, and that's the fact of the matter. And I mean, if someone has selective mutism or a stutter or their, you know,
social anxiety or whatever, yeah, absolutely.
We need to consider the individual, and I know it's difficult, especially in a context where in a class maybe 50 people plus, but I think listening to at least one of them will show you, hey, maybe I should think about how to do this. Like, maybe I should allow the student to do their presentation and record it and then mark it like that. Because some people just, we can't expect them to push their limits for our own sakes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a comfort zone and stepping outside it is one thing, but making somebody push them to an extent where they cannot, whether outside even that, whether actually you're asking them to do something they cannot do, is, yeah, it's so inconsiderate. And also it's counterproductive because then not only are they not going to learn to do it, they're going to learn they can't do it. And so you need to scaffold it and help a bit or find alternatives the ones you suggested.
On top of that, it's also disruptive to the class. For example, me pushing that chair down, the lecture stopped entirely. And my buddy having their little, you know, cry when presenting and telling the teacher to get fucked. That was also disruptive. But, you know, people need to consider as well that they're also impacted by their actions.
Mm.
The rest of the semester, everyone knew that teacher as a bit of a dickhead.
Yeah.
Because she pushed and pushed and pushed.
Yeah.
And she was already, you know, on thin ice with most of the students. But because so many people saw this, it was kind of confirmation of, okay, the rumors are true. You're kind of an asshole.
Yeah. And it's so it's damaging to your own reputation as
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
So is there anything, considering both sort of your reflection on failure and this other person's, this really bad example of teaching, is there something about playfulness and that attitude towards I don't know, somebody was saying joy and cheerfulness, or about resilience that comes from playfulness. Is there anything around that particularly that enables you to learn from those sorts of examples?
Absolutely. So from the particular ones of lecturers who aren't really great, it's kind of the whole thing of just because someone is above you doesn't mean they don't have room to learn, nor does it mean they don't have room to make mistakes. And I think that's an important part of all learning, pedagogical or not. But I also think it might push that agenda for, you know, a more joyful and playful way to actually learn. Because I think if, you know, the English teacher allowed me to kind of make a silly joke or said, ah, there's our guest. It's silly. It relieves the tension. It's playful. And it kind of says, okay, we had a disruption, but let's get back to the lecture. Similarly, with the other lecturer, she could have been a bit more understanding, but instead she decided to humiliate a lot of people, herself included. Again, it goes back to the thing of no one really notices these things that make you feel ashamed, but when you're in a position of, you know, higher on the hierarchy, there are certain expectations that you should not necessarily follow, but consider. And I think considering these things can say, okay, well, this student isn't doing so great up here, so maybe we'd like to see them on TV next time, you know? Just making things more playful makes a person feel less ashamed of their failures. And I think that's inclusive of education as well as crossover, you know, of education, life, and playfulness.
And do you think, because also those people, not taking their side at all, because they do sound like dicks, but they are seeing themselves as a place within that hierarchy as well, aren't they? And maybe they're seeing, some of the reason why they're enforcing those rigid structures is because they feel they need to reinforce those, their position in the hierarchy. And maybe playfulness would give them a break as well.
Yeah, I definitely think there's something to be said about that. And again, it's the whole thing of feeling shame and humiliation. A lot of people will push that side of them down because, oh, play is juvenile or it's childish. And I don't think that's true. I think it's childlike, but that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. Children have fun, and I don't understand why adults shouldn't either, especially if it's a way to diffuse a situation, like making an icebreaker, for example. It's a playful way to start a conversation, but no one sees it as juvenile. We see it as kind of common, you know, ground. So I think there needs to be more of a consideration of, just because you're at the top of the hierarchy doesn't mean you shouldn't engage in a more playful way of learning and, you know, letting people into your lectures.
And being.
And being, exactly.
Yeah. Don't be a dick, be ludic.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've used that one before. So any tips you'd have for people? Well, that's actually the tips then, isn't it? Is like, it doesn't matter who you are, or where you are, or what your place is in the hierarchy, you've got something to gain by creating a playful environment around you, really.
Exactly.
Yeah. You won't have your student. I mean, that student wouldn't have probably perhaps broken down anyway if it had been a more joyful, happy environment, because you feel a lot more comfortable about standing up and talking in front of a group like that anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, like your Comic-Con people. Did you ever go back and do a third cosplay?
I did. I did.
And how did you feel about that?
This one I hadn't sewn. I mean, the next day was another outfit that I'd made, and again, it was not the best. The seaming was awful, everything was not great, but it didn't fall apart, and people were like, oh wow, you made that all by yourself. And it was a fairly well-known character. It was Gotha from Seven Deadly Sins. So again, it's people will acknowledge you even if you think you did a crap job. Sorry, that was a South African word.
Oh, was it cuck?
Cuck, yeah.
Cuck, yeah. There's an English cucka.
So, again, I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, sorry. So even if you're doing a crap job, people still acknowledge the fact that you do have some skills they don't have, probably. I mean, I'm pretty in awe much. Of anybody that can do that sort of stuff. Yeah. And even if it was really bad, I probably wouldn't notice in the first place.
Yeah. And I mean, there are also places where you can buy them, and maybe that's just a way of you expressing yourself more easily. Like, just because I bought it doesn't mean I didn't put in the effort. You know, I saved up, I styled the wig, I did this, I did that. And it's again, using the resources you have as well as using them to your advantage. Again, someone with a, I guess, a nerve issue wouldn't be able to sew in the first place, but they still have access to these fun things that allow them to express themselves. So I think accessibility is also a really big part of playfulness that a lot of people don't necessarily consider. And that's why I'm so into playful learning. Neurodivergent folk might not engage with content the same way that neurotypicals would. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's just room for a bigger conversation about why we associate playfulness with being juvenile, but also why we don't consider how playfulness is some people's way of existing.
Yeah. I was talking to Sarita, who's a psychology lecturer. She does the writes about the psychology of superheroes.
Yeah, she's on my team.
She's brilliant. So some of my colleagues are neurodiverse. I probably am. I'm still going through the process of being assessed for that. And we're saying what high proportion of people are neurodivergent here, and that actually we may be in the majority.
Yeah, we are.
And it's alienating perhaps to the neurotypical people to suddenly be in an environment where you're not the norm anymore. And yeah, that's actually possibly a useful, if they were aware of that, I don't know if they are, it's something for them to take away and think, this is what it's like for everyone else in the rest of the world, really. And I think that's one of the reasons why it can feel a bit overwhelming sometimes. This is a mass of people here who've just come into this environment and are just relaxing in public for the first time.
Yeah, they feel like they can. They feel safe enough to do so. Mm. And again, I forgot what I was going to say. I also am waking up.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So, so time for our naps. How can people find you on the internet? Socials? Are you on any social media?
Before this conference, I uninstalled most of my social media because I needed a little bit of a break from it. But I do still have a Twitter account, and when I get back home, I will likely reinstall all of the things.
And with your work, is there like something you want to plug or a website that you can direct people to? Okay, go ahead.
So particularly with my freelance work, which is what I did with Lauren, our game is on itch.io, which is a platform or a website wherein any game developer can upload their work. And that it's an incredibly good website in terms of educational games, and also in terms of games that are harder to access because they're made by small independent individuals or smaller companies. It's a great site. You can choose your own pricing for a particular project you worked on. A lot of them are free. A lot of them say, hey, maybe you can tip me, maybe you don't have to. So that's where you can find Lauren and I's project, just on itch.io, and then search disaster ethics. Brilliant. As for another plug, my workplace is 24-bit games, and we do porting work, which I suppose isn't necessarily inclusive of pedagogical learning, but it is a really cool spot to know that if you do want to make an educational game, we can make it accessible on every other platform.
Oh, excellent.
Including mobile. Right. So yeah, that's what we do. And in terms of my social media, good luck with this. my Twitter handle is @garbage_fox_.
Oh, okay.
Garbage Fox. Yeah.
Garbage Fox. Well, I'll look out for that. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a follow. Yeah. And then when you're back on. Yeah. Okay. That'll be really good. Okay. So thank you, Kai. I'll just play us out. Oh, we get a little round of applause. Okay, thank you.
You have listened to this on the Pedagogzilla on Tour feed. That's right, we've split our feed into two. So you can now go to pedagogzilla.com and with your podcatcher of choice, subscribe to both or either of our traditional content of pedagogic podcasting with Pop Culture Core, where we explore and understand aspects of pedagogy using pop culture lenses, and also our on-tour content, where we go to conferences, we go out and about, we meet people, and try and share some of the fun, give you the vibes, and learn a little along the way. Head on over to pedagogzilla.com to subscribe to both of those feeds.